Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubis Daf Lamed Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins in the middle of Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph, 19 lines from the top. You'll notice there is a Tanaic source that ends in the middle of the page, and following that, Pligi Bo Ravachov Ravina. As we've been mentioning in the last couple of shiurim, we're in the middle of a very extensive sukya, and hence we can't possibly review everything. But the last point that we mentioned had to do with a melacha that's done on Shabbos, for example, cooking on Shabbos. And this tied into the discussion on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, the Tanaic source of Gonav Tovach B'Shabbos, or slaughtering on Shabbos. An act done on Shabbos, what result does that have with regard to, let us say, the food that was prepared? So we saw a pasuk that was featured at the beginning of the last Tanaic source of Shmartim Es HaShabbos Ki Kodesh Lachem, and from that source we learned that that Mais HaShabbos is Osir Ba'achila, just like Kochim is Osir Ba'achila. When we speak about this Isur of Mais HaShabbos, the prohibition of Mais HaShabbos, is this truly an Isur Doraisa, or is it an Isur Derabonan? And that is the opening point of the Gemara. Pligi Bo, we read the Gemara text now. Pligi Bo Rav Achov Ravino Chad Omar Mais HaShabbos Doraisa. Rav Achon Ravino argue, and one says that it's an Isur Doraisa, it's a Torah level prohibition to eat that food, the Chad Omar Derabonan. And the other says it's an Isur Derabonan, a rabbinic prohibition. Mandomer Doraiso, Kidamoron, the opinion that says it's an Isur Doraisa, it is as we said. We cited a Pasuk, and in the Pasuk we saw a comparison between Shabbos and Kodesh. Man de Omar de Rabbonon, the opinion that says it's an Isur de Rabbonon, why doesn't he say it's an Isur Doraisa, that it's a Torah level prohibition? After all, we saw a Pasuk to that effect. Omar Kral, well, he says, look in the same Pasuk, and you see it says Kodesh he. He Kodesh ve'ein maaseh Kodesh. The Shabbos day itself is a sanctified day, but the actions done, the activities done, do not result in their becoming sanctified or holy. So the day is holy, but not the actions done on the day. They don't result in the food becoming prohibited on a Torah level. The Gemara continues. Ulaman de Omar de Rabbonon, according to the approach that Mais HaShabbos is de Rabbonon. So, we discussed in our previous year slaughtering on Shabbos. Does the meat become forbidden to eat on a Torah level? No. On a Torah level, it's a regular, qualified act of slaughtering, and you could eat it. Only rabbinically it's prohibited. So according to the opinion that we just saw, that Mais HaShabbos, that the product of that which you do on Shabbos is prohibited only on a rabbinic level, Mai Tamayu de Rabbonon de Patri. Use the little star that you see to the left-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. Go back to Lamed Gimel Amud Beis and find again on the left-hand side of the Gemara text. You skim down till you find a star indicating Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph. You can see on that line we saw the Chachomim Potrin. And in that source there were three different cases of stealing and slaughtering. And the first case was stealing and slaughtering, the slaughtering on Shabbos. Now, is that slaughtering on Shabbos a qualified slaughtering on a Torah level? Yes. If it is, then why do the Rabbanon exempt from payment? And it's true that we pointed out that the Chachamim was Rabbi Shimon, who said Shechita Sheina Ria Lo Shema Shechita, that a Shechita, this we saw in our previous year at the top line of this, of Lamed Aleph, that a Shechita that doesn't lead to your being able to eat from it is not considered a Shechita. But on a Torah level, it is a Shechita Ruya. On a Torah level, you could eat the meat that was slaughtered on Shabbos. So why do they exempt from the payment of 4 or 5? The Gemara says, Ki kopatri rabbonon ashara. The exemption from tashlum, from paying, is a reference to the other examples in that source. Not to example number one, but rather shachat lavodazara, which was example number two, which it said, Gona v'tovach lavodis kechavim, and example number three, slaughtering ashor haniskal. Those two cases are cases of slaughtering that do not lead to eating. So we call them Shechita She'eino Ru'uya. The Gemara asks, and notice we have diamonds, and on the side under the Nosei Mivne heading, the diamond appears, Lahazbir Loma Chayav L'Shalem L'Fi Rabbi Meir B'Shechitas Isurei Hano. Slaughtering for idolatrous purposes, or slaughtering an animal that's been sentenced to death. We saw back on Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, Rabbi Meir said you're chayev to pay for the, in addition to the double payment that you make for the theft, you also pay another double payment for having slaughtered it. The Gemara is going to bring that into question. Why should there be any payment made for that? The Gemara, Toveach l'avodis kechavim. In the case of after having stolen the animal, he slaughters it as an act of idolatry. Kevan de shochat be purta. Once he makes a slight incision in the animal's neck, Rashi says he severs one of the tubes in the animal's neck, which is not an act, it's not a complete act of slaughtering yet. But once he's done a little bit, itzar lei, it becomes prohibited, it becomes an offering to an idol. Edoch, the continued act of slaughter, the continued severing, Ki kotovach lav demore kotovach. What's being slaughtered is something that's essentially unowned. Once you rendered it forbidden to benefit from, it's considered something unowned. Why is he obligated to pay? You didn't slaughter someone's animal. At that point, it's not considered owned by anybody. The Rashi elaborates. Lav demore kotovach, deha itzar ale, it becomes forbidden to the owner as well. V'chiyuva de tashlumi arba v'chamisha, and regarding the obligation of paying 4 or 5, tvicha ksiv behu. Tvicha means slaughtering, a halachic slaughtering. V'ad gemar shchita, and until you get to the end of the slaughtering, lo mechayev, until you do a complete act of slaughtering, you're not chayev for that multiple payment, the 4 or 5 payment. Umekami demoti gemar shchita. Before you reach that point, it's a bahano al baleo. It becomes prohibited already because of your act of idolatry to the in this act of slaughtering, of severing. It becomes forbidden for the owner to benefit from it. Umehi shaita afse domine, and from that point, it's considered a loss to the owner. But once again, at that point, the 4 or 5 obligation doesn't set in. The Esau, if the animal were still around, lo hadra bi'ena v'lav demore, he wouldn't be returned to the owner. It doesn't belong to him anymore. So the question in simple terms is, why does Rabbi Meir say he's chayef to pay 4 or 5? And just to repeat the main point, the chiyuv, the obligation of tvicha of the Torah, where the pasuk says utvacho o mechoro, tvacho of the Torah means at the point that you complete a halachically acceptable shechita. But before you even reach that point, the animal becomes forbidden to benefit from. And once that happens, it's not considered the owner's animal anymore. So why does the thief have to pay the additional payment of four times the animal's value? The Gemara answers, Omar Rava, Be'oimer, where the slaughterer says, he declares, Be'gemar Zvicha Hu Ovda, only at the completion, with the completion of the act of slaughtering, at that point I declare my service to the idol. So by the time that he reaches that point, up till that point it hasn't become usur yet, it hasn't become prohibited. Only an act of idolatry creates the prohibition. But up till the act of idolatry, he hasn't declared his interest in such. And therefore, it's a complete act of slaughtering, and that's what generates the Chiyuv 4 or 5. True, at that point, he declares his service to the idol. Question. Shor HaNiskal, an animal that was sentenced to death because it killed somebody. Lav didei hu dekotovach. Once an animal is sentenced to death, we saw in the source a person stole a shor haniskal. But once the animal was sentenced to death, it doesn't belong to the owner anymore. It's forbidden to benefit from it. It must be killed, and that's it. So a thief stole a shor haniskal. Why does Rabbi Meir say that for the theft and for the slaughtering, he has to pay 4 or 5? But as the Gemara says, shor haniskal lav didei hu dekotavach. It's not the owner's animal that was slaughtered. Omar Rava. There's an answer. It's a rather creative answer, and it lasts a number of lines, as the long marking indicates. So Rabbah says, Omar Rava hocha b'mayaskinon kegoin shemosroi l'shoimer v'hizik b'vei shoimer. An owner of an animal gave the animal to a person to watch, gave it to his friend to watch. And while in the shomer's house, the animal did the damage for which it's guilty of death. And v'nigmar dinei b'vei shomer. And while in the shomer's domain, the court ruled that it is the animal's to be sentenced to stoning for having killed somebody. V'gonvoi ganov mi'beis shomer. The thief stole that animal from the home of the shomer. The Rebbe Meir, who is mechayev payment, there's combined opinions that will help to explain Rebbe Meir's position. Savar law ke Rebbe Yankiv and Savar law ke Rebbe Shimon. Rebbe Meir holds, he accepts the approaches of Rebbe Yankiv in one area and Rebbe Shimon in another area, as will become clear. Sovar lo k'Rebbe Yankiv d'omar af mishenigmar dino hechzira shomer l'baylov muhsar. Point one is that in this case of a shomer in whose domain an ox had damage and became sentenced to death, the shomer, if the animal is around, he can return the animal to the owner, and as far as the shomer's financial obligations and responsibilities to the owner, he has thereby fulfilled his responsibility. He received an animal, he returns an animal. I know that you'll say that the animal is not worth anything anymore. That is irrelevant as far as Rabbi Yankiv is concerned. As far as he is concerned, the return of the animal exempts the shomer from any other financial responsibility. Bearing that in mind, we continue in the Gemara. V'sovar lo k'Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Meir also adopts Rabbi Shimon's approach to tort law. The Omar dovar ha'goreim l'mamon k'mamon dami. Something that itself causes value, even though it itself doesn't inherently have any value, is viewed as something of value. Now let's translate that into more practical terms. the Shomer that we're speaking about here, if the animal is around, the Shomer returns the animal, even though it's been sentenced to death, and he's finished. He doesn't have any further obligations to the owner. But let us say, like we saw over here, the animal was stolen. The animal is stolen from the Shomer. What does the Shomer, the watchman, do now? He doesn't have the animal to return. So he's going to have to pay out of pocket to the owner for not having returned his animal. Have to pay the value of the animal to the owner. So what did the thief do? The thief caused goreim. You see the word goreim in the Gemara? That means causing. The thief caused the shomer to have to pay money out of pocket. So that animal, even though it inherently didn't have any value after it was sentenced to death, it's considered something of value because of what we just described. It causes money to be paid. So that the original question was, the Shor HaNiskal, it's something that has no value. Being that we set it up in this way, that it was stolen from a shomer, it is considered something that has value, and hence the subsequent stealing of it generates the 4 or 5 payment. And as we explained in our previous year, we now come to Rava as house number 2. This is in contrast with house number 1 that we saw in our previous year. It was Rabbi Yochanan's name that we highlighted. These two opinions are coming to explain the source on Lamed Gimel, Amud Beis, of Gonav V'Tovach B'Shabbos, etc. Rabbi Yochanan's explanation with regard to that source was Toveach HaYedei Acher. The one that stole is not the one that did the Shechita. So that we brought that in, that information in, to explain Reish Lakish, who set up our Mishnah in resolving the contradiction between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Makis. Reish Lakish's approach to our Mishnah was that Loiku Mishalim Islay, but as far as our Mishnah being authored by Rebbe Meir, Reish Lakish said, Rebbe Meir holds that you can have a dual punishment when it comes to lashing and payment, but not so with Mace Umishalim. Mace Umishalim, you can't have someone who's simultaneously sentenced to death and also have to pay money for the offense. So how do we explain Rebbe Meir as saying Gona V'Tovach B'Shabbos is Chayev B'Tashlumen according to Rebbe Meir? So Rebbe Yochanan said it's because the slaughtering did not take place by the one who is going to have to pay. The slaughtering was done by someone else. So that's someone else. He'll be sentenced to death for violating Shabbos, but the one who has to pay has no death penalty upon him. That was Rebbe Yochanan's approach. Rabba Omar, the fellow who violated Shabbos is the same fellow that stole the animal. And what we're working again within the Shita of Rebbe Meir as per Reish Lakish's presentation. And we're also telling you that you can't have Meis Umishalim. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. The Rebbe Meir, Loiku Mishalim Islay, Mesu Mishalim Lesay, in general, Rebbe Meir will tell you that there is Malkus, there's a possibility of giving lashes and expecting the offender to pay, but not to be sentenced to death and also pay, which helps, as we said, to explain our Mishnah. And what about Tovach B'Shabbos? What about that? The shiny honey, the examples, the three examples in the source on Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, they are different. The Chidush Shechit Shetura, they represent an area of novelty in law. The Knas, the Chidush is in terms of a Knas type payment, a fine, a payment that doesn't reflect the actual market value loss, but rather a superimposed payment because of a forbidden act that was done. it's a fine, and in that type of payment, which is not a mammon payment, it's not a direct financial loss compensation type payment, but it's a fine, afal gav de mikdal mishalim, even though the offender is sentenced to death, a knas payment he will have to make. So that with Rabbo's explanation, the case of tovach ganav tovach b'shabbos, Rabbi Meir is saying you have to pay, doesn't contradict the idea that Rabbi Meir holds meis u'mishalein lesle, that you can't have someone sentenced to death and also pay. V'asdo Rabbo l'tame. Rabbo, in saying this, is consistent with what he has said elsewhere. Before we go further in the Gemara, there's a note that we have on the side that is worth citing. We just said that according to Rabbah's approach, our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir, and as far as Meisu Mishalim Lesle, as far as Tovach Gonav Tovach B'Shabbos, that's a Knas. However, our Mishnah mentions Boal Bito, and Boal Bito, father rapes his daughter. The Mishnah said he's exempt from paying. What's he exempt from paying? He's exempt from paying the Knas. But why should he be exempt from paying the Knas? Is it not a case of Mace Umeshalem Knas? And we said that the Torah, Rabbah himself just said that the Torah is Mechadish, that you do pay that type of payment, a Knas payment, even though there's a death penalty involved. So our start note says that Lekamen Lamed Hamid Beis Hagemor Titiachis La Sheila. The Gemara will deal with this question of Dima Torah Chitshe Shebeknas Meisu Mishalem. If the Torah presents this novel point that one can be sentenced to death and also be expected to pay a Knas payment, Loma Haboa Bita Boinus Einu Mishalem. Why then does a father who rapes his daughter not have to pay, as the Mishnah on Lamed Vov Amud Beis says explicitly? Vinitztarech Levara Lefi Rabbah. Will then have to explain, according to Rabbah himself, Mishnosenu Keman. Our Mishnah is authored by whom? So that up till now, we saw Rabbah functioning in the context of, we'll say, of Reish Lakish, and Reish Lakish's answer that our Mishnah was according to Rabbi Meir, and only defending the point of Meisu Mishalim Lesle in light of the case of Ganav Tovach B'Shabbos, but as far as Rabbah himself is concerned, we still have to clarify, according to Rabbah, our Mishnah is in accordance with whom. And in fact, Rabbah will appear with our number 4 crown marking. But until that point, we continue in the Gemara over here. We said that Rabbah, in saying that the Torah was mechadish by knas, that you pay, even though in general meisu mishalem you wouldn't pay, you wouldn't have misa and tashlum. This is Rabbah consistent with what he has said elsewhere. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei mivne heading, a triangle is featured. Hagemara mevio shte halachas shel Rabbah. The Gemara will present 2 halachas of his. Ve'achar kach maris hatzorich lishneim, and then show why do we need both. Shemalamdin that teach to the Rabbah meisu mishalem lesle. That according to Rabbah, you don't have someone dying and also paying. L'chol halacha yesh shnei halakim, and we also note that each halacha has 2 parts. We have a triangle, and an aleph and beis appear after triangle 1, and triangle number 2 also an aleph and beis. So now we continue in the Gemara text. Diyoma Rabba, so we said that the ozdo rabba l'tame, diyoma rabba, 4 lines from the top, hoyegedi gonuv lo. A person happened to have a goat in his domain that he had stolen. The theft didn't take place on Shabbos. The theft took place before Shabbos. Utvachol b'Shabbos, and this thief that had stolen the goat, he slaughtered it on Shabbos. Chayev, he has to pay the 4-5 payment. The 4-5, the multiple payment made in the case of someone who steals and slaughters is a knas, and this is a chidush, that a person who does an act that carries with it a death penalty, like Shabbos violation, he holds like Rebbe Meir, that, as we explained before, that when it comes to knas, mace umeshalim. The Gemara goes on, Shikvar nischayev beginevo koidem shiyovo lidei isur Shabbos. He became chayev for the theft before Shabbos came about. Gonav, and this idea we'll explain shortly, as we have to go on a little bit more in the Gemara and then go over the points. Gonav v'tovach b'Shabbos poter. If he did the act of theft and slaughtering on Shabbos, the initial act of theft was done on Shabbos, poter, he will be exempt. She'im ein gineva, ein tavicha v'ein mechira. If you can't start off the payment process for the initial act of theft, so then the multiple payments don't set in either. That sounds a bit abstract. So let's go over this. It is true that for knas payments, we do impose that even if it comes about at the time that a person is becoming sentenced to death. However, basic mamon payments, not so. The case of gonav v'tovach, we spoke about this in our previous year, that we broke it down in to its component parts. When one steals in a surreptitious fashion, he has to pay kefel. Kefel is double. That's the principal plus one more time. So that's twice the value of the animal. Principal plus one. That's kefel. If he then slaughters that animal, the animal that he stole, he pays another two times the value of the animal, for a total of four times the value of the animal. If he did the act of theft on Shabbos, that means he took the animal from a private domain outside to a public domain. He took it out. He stole it from the owner's property. That act is the act of theft, and it's at the same time of Shabbos violation. Financial aspect, the mammon aspect, without regarding the fine aspect. The mammon aspect is the principal. The principal, that is the mammon is payment that corresponds to the loss of market value that the victim suffered. So a person loses his animal at the hands of a thief, so he lost the principal value of the animal. That's a mammon payment. That's called the keren, the principal. For taking the animal out of the owner's domain, so the ganav is chayev, he becomes chayev, the principal plus one. That's what we call kefel. But if that took place on Shabbos, Shabbos is a capital offense. And we've said till now, meis umeshalem lesle. You don't suffer court execution and also have to pay a mamon payment. And once I knock out the principle, what am I left with? I'm left with three times more for the kefel for the initial theft, plus twice the value for having slaughtered it. But the concept of paying three times, true, that's the knas part. Because when you subtract the principle, you're left with the principle plus three is a total of four. But when you subtract the principle, we're saying he's exempt from that, you're left with a payment of three times the value of the animal. The Torah doesn't ever say that you pay three times the value. The Torah speaks about paying four times the value or five times the value of the animal, but not three times. Therefore, if the initial act of theft is done on Shabbos with a subsequent slaughtering, he is exempt. And the Gemara says, Shim ein gineva, ein tavicha vein mechira. If there is no payment for the initial theft, as we just explained, so then there's no room for imposing upon him the payment for tevicha and mechira, or mechira, or sale of the animal. Sale we haven't emphasized so much, but just like slaughtering an animal that results in slaughtering a stolen animal, the animal that you stole results in multiple payments, so too the subsequent sale of an animal that you stole likewise. But we don't have to confuse ourselves with too many examples. The Omar Rabba, Hoyo Gidi Gonov Lo, a person happened to have a stolen goat. This person took the stolen goat along with him on a little expedition of thievery. And in the thievery we're referring to here is called Baba Machteres. The person took his goat along with him, wanted to keep, maybe he wanted the stolen goat to keep him company. And he then started digging into someone's house to steal some valuables. As he's digging into someone's house, let us make it clear, this case of Baba Machteres, the Ganav at that point is subjecting himself to, we'll call a form of death, we'll call a quasi-death penalty, which what we mean by that is that the owner who confronts someone stealthily entering his house, the owner of the property can kill him, rightfully so. He has a Torah license to kill the intruder. So the intruder, while he's intruding, for those moments that he is involved with the intrusion, we can view him as if he is subject to a death penalty. Not true, it's not a court death penalty, but it's death all the same. And at that moment, he slaughters the gedi that he had stolen previously. We say chayev is chayev to pay the 4 or 5 shikvar nischayev begineva, the guilt, the financial obligation and the knas that is engendered by theft that had set in already. He had become obligated to that koydem shiavoli de isur machteres. He had stolen it prior to this particular intrusive expedition. Gona v'tovach b'machteres, as the person was invading or intruding into someone's property, he also at that time he also stole the animal. So let's say he stole the owner's animal and slaughtered it all at the same time. Potter, he would be exempt from paying the 4 or 5 shim ein geneva. You see, for the as far as the principal payment is concerned, that he's not obligated to, because right now he's subjecting himself to death. And we say ein mesu mishalem. So once you knock out the principal, ein tevicha vein mechira, the additional payments for slaughtering or for selling don't apply, because as we said, when you knock out the principal, you'd be left with a 3 time value payment, the knas aspect. But the Torah doesn't envision a person ever paying 3 times the value of animal. There's a 4 time the value of the animal payment that's made, but not a 3 time payment. So we have 2 examples that echo the same idea. Why do I need Rabba to state both cases? Would it be not sufficient for him to teach one and I'd figure out the other? So Gemara says, that's not so, and it makes a long point. Utsrich, I need both cases. De'i ashminen Shabbos. Had I told you the case of Gona v'tovach b'Shabbos, that he's potter from paying, Mishum de'isura isur oilom. The Shabbos violation is a permanent violation. But what do we mean by that? What we mean by that is that at any point, it would be 20 years later, if witnesses testify that this guy violated Shabbos 20 years ago, he will be put to death by the court. And that's an Isur Olam, and therefore it's very, very chomor. It's Isur, is very chomor. And that kind of violation is capable of exempting him from money payments. Abo Machteres to Isur Shahu, but the issue of the stealthful intrusion is only momentary. That means after the guy, let's say, leaves the premises, the owner can't then kill him. The owner can kill him only when the owner feels threatened, when he feels his life is threatened, and that's during the time of intrusion, but not later on. So it's not the intruder is not subjecting himself to a permanent type, long-term death possibility. So it's maybe not serious enough to exempt from the payment. Aim although, maybe in that case, where he was gone out of the Tovach B'machteres, maybe he wouldn't be exempt from paying. Therefore, Rabbah has to teach that Gonav Vatov Machteres is exempt, and not leave me to conclude that from the first case that Rabbah taught. The Ashmina Machteres, and had I taught the exemption in the case of the stealthful intrusion, theft, and slaughtering, Mishum, there's an aspect of severity that you don't find by Shabbos. That, and what is that? Mishum de Machtarto Zuhi Hasra also. In simple terms, he's subjecting himself to death without the benefit of receiving a warning ahead of time. His digging in is stealthful intrusion itself is his warning. So it doesn't require any other warning. And that shows, and this svara, by the way, we saw a couple dapin ago when we dealt with the Adim Zoymimim, that they have this chumrah, this severity about them, that they are punished even without the benefit of having a warning ahead of time. So something like that, I would say, is so severe an offense that it's capable of exempting from the financial liability. Avol Shabbos, the Bayo Hasra, when it comes to a Shabbos violator, in order to subject him to a death penalty, he would have had to receive a warning beforehand. And therefore, maybe Shabbos is not sufficiently severe a violation to exempt him from paying money, from exempting him from making the financial restitution that he would be obligated to. So it won't exempt him. Amolo, I might say he's not exempt. Tzricho, therefore, I need Rabbah to teach me that too is a case of exemption. Before we go further, we have a topic heading. On the side, under the Nosei heading, we call this Dino Shel Rav Papa, Rav Papa's teaching. Chiyuv Oinsim Shel Hashoyel, the obligations of a borrower, which include damage to the item even under ones circumstances, under circumstances beyond his control. Those obligations that set upon someone who borrows an item, chal mishas ha'oines velo mishas ha'sheila, the obligation sets in only at the time that the actual mishap takes place, not at the time of the initial borrowing. And that too sounds a bit abstract, but we'll try to see a practical application of that distinction. The Gemara, Omar Rav Papa, hoisa para genuva lo. A person had a cow. Now notice, we dashed underline para, and we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, and if you skim up, you see there's a line that has an arrow, and on that line, you notice a mention was made of a gedi, a goat. So now we continue in the Gemara. Rav Papa says, "Hoisa para genuva lo v'tvocha utvocha b'Shabbos." He had a previously stolen cow in his possession, and he slaughtered it on Shabbos. Chayav. This individual, this offender, is chayav to pay the four-time obligation. In this case, a para will generate a five-time principal, five times the principal value payment. He had already been obligated for the Geneva without incurring a Shabbos offense In other words, he had stolen it before Shabbos set in, so the need to pay the principal plus one already set in, and upon that we superimpose the additional three times value because of the slaughtering that he did on Shabbos. Hoy saw para sheula loy utvacha b'Shabbos. If a person had an animal that he borrowed, a cow that he borrowed, in other words, it came into his possession legitimately, and he slaughtered it on Shabbos Potter, he is exempt. Now, at the point that he slaughtered it, he basically is also, that's considered stealing it. He didn't receive the parah, he didn't borrow the parah to slaughter it, he borrowed the parah to work with it, and then to return it to the owner. What did he do? He went and slaughtered it. But he slaughtered it on Shabbos, and at that moment was his act of theft as well. That's the case we've discussed already extensively of Miso Momon coming simultaneously, and we say for that there's exemption. So now we heard two points of Rav Papa. Omar le Rav Acha bre de Rava le Rav Ashi. Rav Acha turns to Rav Ashi and asks about Rav Papa's teaching. He says, Rav Papa, poro asa l'ashminen. Here, use the arrow. Now, if you line up all the arrows, What is bothering Rav Acha is Rav Papa number one. What is Rav Papa number one teaching me that I didn't know before, courtesy of Rabbah with the case of the goat? Is Rav Papa just coming to change animals on us, to give us a little sense of variety animal-wise? There's no difference whatsoever in Rav Papa number one and Rabbah's teaching above, other than the animal that's featured in the example. So Rav Papa it's not reasonable that's all Rav Papa's point is. It's just to give me the same exact halacha with a different animal as its example. So Omar Le, Rav Ashi says, no, Rav Papa Sheula Sashmina, Rav Papa number two is what his point is. His Chiddush, he didn't intend to tell us something novel in point number one, but rather in point number two he was presenting a Chiddush, which is, okay, so that's taught in contrast to point number one, whereas in point number one, where the parah was Genuva lo, he'll have to pay, where the parah was Sheula lo, he doesn't have to pay. And now he elaborates. Salka daita chamina. Hoyol the Omer Rav Papa. I would have thought that since Rav Papa has said in the past, Mishas Mashicha hu dischayv le b'mezoneseh, one borrows an animal, from the point that he draws the animal, he takes the animal from the owner, takes it out of the owner's house, en route to his own domicile. From the point that he's Moshef, he draws the animal, the borrower becomes obligated to sustain the animal, to feed the animal. Hachanami, I would have thought, Mishas She'ela Ischayiv Bo'inseha. From the point of the borrowing, he becomes obligated to compensate for anything that befalls the animal. So that with that thinking, I would have thought that the tevicha that he did on Shabbos is something that would obligate him to pay, because the principal obligation set in before Shabbos. Kamash malon. So what Rav Papa reveals to us is not to think like that, but rather, it's only at the Shas Tevicha, at the actual time of slaughtering, does the act of theft actually take place. And since the basic act of theft takes place on Shabbos, so that the principal value, which would have been obligatory, sets in at the same time that a capital offense takes place, there is no monetary restitution that is made, and therefore all of the rest of the payments fall away as well. As we explained, the Torah envisions someone paying four times, not three times, the value. Let us take a look together at Rashi. to the lower part of the narrow lines of Rashi. Hachanami, this is Rashi explaining what I would have thought. Hachanami, Nemo, I would have thought the same. Mishas Shela, from the time of the initial borrowing, which took place before Shabbos, Ramile Chiyuv Karen, that the principal obligations set in. The Chitovcha b'Shabbos l'chayven, if he then slaughters the animal that he borrowed previously, if he slaughters it on Shabbos, let him be chayev for the full range of payment. Kamash Malon, Rashi continues, Kevon dechol kama de'isa, since it is such that as long as the animal is extant, hodra be'ena, it is returned as it is to the owner. Hahi shaita dekotovach lo kagozila. Only at the point of the slaughtering is the act of theft said to take place. And since that takes place simultaneously with a Shabbos violation, so the monetary obligation falls away. We continue in the Gemara with a statement of Rava concerning heirs of a person's estate. Omar Rava, hiniach lohen avien pora sheula. A person died, leaving some children, and amongst the possessions, he also happened to have a borrowed cow. Mishtam shinbo koi meish, also the children, they have a right to use that animal till the end of the borrowing period. So if the father had borrowed it for 30 days and after 10 days the father died, they can use it for another 20 days. Mesa ein chayavim ba'insa. If that animal dies, the borrowed animal dies, the heirs of this estate are not obligated to compensate the owner. These heirs, the children, are not the borrowers. A borrower is chayav for oines. Someone who borrows is obligated to compensate the owner even when damage beyond one's control happens to take place. But they're not the borrowers, and hence they don't have an oines obligation. Kisvurin shel aviem hi. These children, the heirs of the deceased, thought that the pora was their father's pora. Utavachua viachlua. They slaughtered it and ate the meat, and it turns out it wasn't their father's. Mishalman demei basur bazal. They have to compensate the owner to the tune of what's called basur bazal, the cheap value of meat in the market, which for our purpose means if the animal was worth $90, they'll pay $60, two-thirds of its value. And now there's a concluding comment made by Rava that is stated, but it's not clear what it is referring to, and the Gemara will clarify that. Hiniach lohen aviem achrayas nechosim. If the deceased man in this story had left property, land, achrayas nechosim means real estate, land, property. Chayovin l'shalem. So then the heirs are chayav to compensate. Iko de masni lo aresha v'iko de masni lo asefa. There are those that take this last phrase of hiniach lohen aviem and attach it to the resha. In other words, the resha spoke about a father that had a borrowed animal and the children are allowed to use it. And it said in the source that it said in Rava's teaching that if the animal dies, they're not obligated to pay out of pocket. However, according to this approach that attaches the last phrase of Rava on case Aleph, it means that true, they don't have to pay cash out of their own pockets because they're not the borrowers. However, had the father left landed, the land of the father becomes obligated toward his debts. And according to this approach, the father as a borrower incurs the debt over the death of the animal. So for the death of the animal, the heirs themselves don't have to pay out of their own pockets. They're not the borrowers. However, the land of the deceased, will say, a lien set in on that land at the point that the father borrowed the animal. The father was still alive. And that land is the father's representative, so to speak. And the obligation to cover oinus, to cover even extenuating circumstances loss, is something that the father became obligated in. Now, when did the animal die? Not in the father's lifetime, but the father became obligated for the principal value of the animal before the oinus took place. That very point is different than the way Rav Papa approached a shoyel and the point in time at which he becomes obligated for the oinus. So the Gemara says that, as we said, some teach this case of Hinichlen Avim Achreis Nechosim, this last phrase of Rava, as referring to the case of the animal dying, and the heirs don't have to pay out of their own pockets, but if there is land in that estate, the land would have to be transferred to the owner of the animal. And there are those, V'iko demasni lo seifa, there are those that refer this to the second, the Bay's teaching of Rava, where the heirs themselves slaughtered the animal, so they themselves caused the loss to the owner. So if they don't have any land, so they pay cash, 2/3 the value of the animal. But if there is land, so the land will be used to compensate the owner. We have to add the main point: when the land is used to pay, then it's a full payment. If that's the means of payment, if it's the land that was left by the father, so then it would be a full payment. If it's cash out of their own pockets, so then they would pay demei boser bezol. We could see this point if we look together in the Rashi under the Gemara text, the fifth line under the Gemara text, V'iko demasi lo haseifa hecho detovchua, where the heirs themselves slaughtered the animal, imeniach len aviyam achrayas nechosim mishalmin tashlumi ma'alya velo bezol. Then they would have to pay full payment. The boyalu lemedak, they should have been more careful and checked out the animal's actual, the real ownership of the animal. We turn back to the Gemara. So we saw this closing phrase of Rava as to, namely, what is that referring to? Is it referring to the case of the animal dying in the after the original owner had deceased? Is it referring to the case of the heirs slaughtering the animal? Man de masni lo aresha, kol shekein aseifa. If you say that there is a chiyuv oinsin that sets in at the original time of borrowing, so all the more so will there be an obligation to pay in the case of the seifa, where the heirs themselves physically slaughtered and ate the animal. And that whole approach is upligo de Rav Papa. This approach is at odds or is different than Rav Papa's approach. Rav Papa's approach, we emphasized earlier, was that the chiyuv oinsin, the obligation of a shoel, of a borrower, to compensate for all causes of loss, that obligation sets in only at the time of the actual loss, not from the initial point of borrowing. The way we would be explaining Rava now is that obligation to compensate for any form of loss sets in at the time of the initial borrowing and not at the time of the actual loss. So if you say that the closing phrase of Rava is referring to the opening point he made, the Aleph point that he made, so that would be saying that Rava is at odds or approaches Shoel borrowers' obligations in a different way than that of Rav Papa. Uman de masni lo asefa, avol ha-reisha lo. But if you say that the closing phrase of Rava's teaching has relevance only to the case where the heirs themselves physically stole the animal in the sense of their slaughtering and eating the animal, but in the case of the reisha, where the animal merely died, it was a case of pure ones, where the animal died, they would not be obligated to transfer land as payment. V'hainu de Rav Papa, that conforms to Rav Papa's approach. After all, the heirs, they're not the actual borrowers of it, and at the time of the borrowing, no obligation for ones set in. Therefore, an onus takes place outside the context of a borrower, no need to compensate. So that conforms to Rav Papa's approach. Rav Papa's approach having stated that a borrower becomes obligated only at the time of the onus. But in this case, the borrower was dead already, and the heirs, they're not the borrowers. Now, before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side, the Nosei, the topic heading, HaGemara Chozeres Levarer. The Gemara now goes back to clarify Loma Reb Yochanan on Lamed Beis Omed Beis Vereish Lokish on Lamed Gimel Omed Beis Kol Echad Lo Hizbiras HaMishnah Kamo HaSheni. We mentioned already quite a few times in the last couple of shurim that we're involved with one very long sugya. The sugya having begun on Lamed Aleph Omed Beis, where a stiro was raised, a contradiction was raised between our Mishnah and the Mishnah Maseches Makis. And we're not going to go over all of that now, but we had several resolutions. We had Ula, we had Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Bishlamah, the Gemara goes on to say, Bishlamah, Rabbi Yochanan, Lo Omar Kareish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan, who explained our Mishnah that payment is made and there's no lashing, is simply because there was no warning given ahead of time. And in the absence of warning, so no lashing penalty can be meted out. The Mishnah in Makis, which says that for Bo'al Achoso there is lashing, that's because a warning was given. So there's no contradiction in the Mishnayos. That was Rav Yochanan's approach, and I understand his taking that approach and not that of Reish Lakish. Lo Amar Reish Lakish, what did Reish Lakish do? Reish Lakish said that the Mishnah in Ksubis that says that he pays, that payment is in addition to the lashing. So Rabbi Yochanan didn't say like Reish Lakish, the Kamoikim Lo Karabonan. Rabbi Yochanan's approach sets up our Mishnah like the Rabbonan, not like an individual opinion, that of Rabbi Meir, which was Reish Lakish's approach. So that Rabbi Yochanan's approach is, let's say, more reasonable in that sense, that you're setting it up like a majority opinion and not like that of a single opinion, that of Rabbi Meir. Ella Reish Lakish, my time alomak Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish said that our Mishnah in Ksubis, which says that he has to pay, and he pays it, and that's in addition to the lashing, this because our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Meir. Why did he choose that approach and not choose the approach of Rabbi Yochanan? Omar Loch, Reish Lakish answers, Kevon de'ilu asru bay potter, since had there been a warning that the person subjecting himself to lashing by the forbidden act of intimacy that he did, the rape that he did, since had he been warned, he would have been potter, he would have been exempt from mamon. Kilo asru beinami, even without the warning, potter. Since in potential there would have been exemption from mamon because of a warning, therefore even if there is no warning, he will also be exempt. So that suggest that our Mishnah has payment because simply because there was lack of warning, Reish Lakish says, I don't accept that approach. Since had there been warning, there would have been exemption. Of course, according to what we have to emphasize is Reish Lakish is talking to Rabbi Yochanan in Rabbi Yochanan's terms. Because Rabbi Yochanan said that the mission was according to the Rabbanan. And the Rabbanan don't hold from loke u'mishalim. It's one or the other. In other words, if the person's going to get lashings, he's not going to have to pay. So the Rabbi Yochanan said, Reish Lakish says, according to you, Rabbi Yochanan, that is setting up the mission of the fee, the Rabbanan, that you don't have both punishments. Since had there been a warning, there would be no money payment. Even if there is no warning, there's not going to be any money payment. The Ozdu Litamayu. The statements that we just saw made by the Gemara explaining Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish is in fact these opinions, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, consistent with what they have said elsewhere. The Chiyosa Rav Dimi Omar, when Rav Dimi came, he told us, and he's going to present, he's going to make a whole presentation here, but we must structurally pause for a moment. Glancing at the side, no say. The topic heading, we already introduced it. Well, let's read our note. Machlokas Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, Be'inyan Chayvi Mises V'Chayvi Malkias. We're going to see a machlokas, a controversy between Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish regarding someone who committed an offense. An offense that has a capital punishment attached to it, or lashing as its punishment. Sheish b'hen gam chiyuv mamon. In addition to either the death penalty or the lashing, that same act also incurred a financial obligation. Ma dinam legabi tashlumin. What is the approach to be taken to these types of offenses? E lo asrube, if there was no warning, mishum miso malchus, no warning because of warning of the of execution, of court execution, or of court mandated lashing. So that if there is a warning and the person would be subjected to court execution or court lashing. According to the Rabbanan, let's leave Rabbi Meir aside for a moment. According to the Rabbanan, meis v'lo mishalim. What happens if there's not going to be any misa, or what's going to happen if there's not going to be any malchus? Structurally, we have a mivnei, structural note, the diamond. This diamond is lahavlid. It's the highlight. Rav Dimi, the Rovin. Rovin will appear on Lamed Hey Omen Aleph. Shemevian kol echad as girsasa b'machlokes Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Dimi and Rovin each one has their own version in presenting Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So let's first look at Rav Dimi and then maybe briefly skip to Rovin, just to give a sense of sugya structure, because as we've already experienced in the last few shurim, we end up leaving off in the middle of a discussion due to the Daf Yomi context, but in order to at least preserve a sense of structure understanding, we sometimes skip ahead just to give you that clearer picture. So we continue now with Rav Dimi, the Chiyosa Rav Dimi Omar. Chayve Mises Shogigin. Shogigin means unintentional. In other words, let's take the simple example, an act of murder. That's Chayve Mises. A person who murders is subjected to capital punishment. But Shogigin, he did it unintentionally. What does that mean for our purposes? He committed an act of murder but didn't receive a warning ahead of time. Without warning, we can't be sure that it was premeditated murder. So, a capital offense without prior warning. V'chayve malchus shogigin, a case of someone doing something that warrants lashings, but was not warned ahead of time. So we call that unintentional act of a chiyuv malchus. For a simple example, someone ate some pork without having been warned ahead of time. V'dovar acher. And regarding these two cases, Aleph and Beis, there is also a chiyuv momon. So let us say the fellow, he ate pork belonging to someone else. So there's a financial aspect. Pay for the guy's loss. You stole his meat by eating it. Echayve misos shogigin. It was while he was in the course of violating Shabbos, let us say, he also burnt someone's a heap of grain on Shabbos. So causing a fire on Shabbos is a Shabbos violation, and causing the owner's loss of his grain is a financial obligation. So we have these two examples of a chiyuv mamon. It's a chiyuv misa with mamon and a chiyuv malchus with mamon. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Chayav, Reish Lakish Omar Potter. In these cases, when it's done b'shogeg, these two acts, a Shabbos violation but unintentional, a malchus violation, a lashing warranted sin, but no warning ahead of time. And in both cases, there was financial loss. Rabbi Yochanan says he has to compensate. Reish Lakish Omar Potter, he is exempt from compensating. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Chayav, D'hol Lo Aser Bei, he has to pay the money because he didn't receive a warning for the more serious offense that would have exempted him, and a person been, let's say, subject to capital punishment, to court execution, so then he wouldn't have paid. But he's not going to be subject to that. So he does have to pay. Reish Lakish Amar Potter. And here you see Reish Lakish that we saw reflected earlier. And this is what the Gemara meant when we said that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are consistent with what they said over here. Reish Lakish says, Potter, Kevan Ilu Asru Bei Potter. Since had there been an actual warning, he would have been exempted from the financial side of things. Kilo asru beinami poter. Even in the absence of the warning, he is exempt. That is Rav Dimi's presentation of the machlokas. Let's skip to Rav Rovin's presentation. On Daf Lamed Hey, Omed Aleph, a little less than halfway down, you notice Rovin at the beginning of the line with a diamond. It's called number two. Notice the difference. We read Rovin. We're skipping now once again to Lamed Hey, Omed Aleph, in the middle, less than halfway down. Rovin Omar, Elokioso Rovin Omar, after, we'll say, convincing question on the previous approach, which had mentioned Chayvei Mises Shogegin would be obligated to pay. That was Rabbi Yochanan's approach. We will then show that cannot be. Elokioso Rovin Omar Chayvei Mises Shogegin Kuliyama Lo Pligidib Turin. When it comes to an offense that was potentially punishable by execution, that's Chayvei Mises. It was done without prior warning. Everyone agrees that no need is made for offering financial compensation for the loss that took place at that time. Ki pligi, when is there a machlokus between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish b'chayvei malchus shogegin v'dovar acher? Only in the case of a malchus-oriented offense done unintentionally, which involved a financial loss and need for compensation, there you have, and only in that situation do you have a machlokas. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayav, and two lines later you see Reish Lakish says Potter. Now, that discussion in all likelihood will have to wait for our next year, but in the meantime, let us continue with the Gemara on the bottom of Lamed Dalamed Beis, Eisvei Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish represented the opinion that goes for the for exemption. Reish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan, "Lo ye oson onosh ye onesh." This is a pasuk that we've seen cited on a previous daf, And the translation is, if there is no ason, that's referring to a case where two people were fighting with each other and one ends up hitting a pregnant woman, causing a miscarriage. And it says that if v'lo ya'ason, if there is no death, then onosh yonesh, then there will be payment made. My love, asoin mamish. Now, we must read Rashi. We're at the top of Lamed Hamed Aleph. Let's read Rashi on the top, and this is to explain Reish Lakish's question. My love, asoin mamish. Im lo meisa ha'isha, if the lady does not die, yeonesh hanoigev b'dmei v'lodois. Then the nogef is the one that hit her and caused the miscarriage. He'll then have to pay for the value loss in the miscarriage. Ha imesa. However, if the woman dies, lo yeonesh, then no payment. V'afilu lo hisrubo. Even had there been no warning ahead of time, which means even if there wouldn't have been an actual chiyuv misas based in, there still would have been exemption. So not only where there is a warning and there would be a capital offense, a capital punishment, even when there's no warning, since the potential for a capital punishment existed, there is exemption. And that's Bekashi Rabbi Yochanan. That's a problem. That is not what Rabbi Yochanan said. That's against Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara answers, Loi. That's not the understanding. Din Ason. Now that's a little abstract. So we look again in the Rashi, and the Rashi says where we left off, Lo. Din Ason. Hochi Kamakra. The Pasuk that we read, which said, V'lo Yason, Ono Shionesh. Hochi komakro im ein mishpat moves lanogev kagon shalom meso isha. If there is no death sentence to the offender, to the hitter, because the woman simply did not die, oi meso, or she did die, velo hisrubo, and he had not been warned. Oh no, Sheonesh, he must pay. So Rabbi Yochanan understands the pasuk his way, that says that payment will be made if there is no actual death penalty, or even if the woman dies, but there was no warning. If there was no warning, that's what we call that chiyuv misos shogigin. The pasuk says, "Ono shionesh, he must pay," and that is what Rabbi Yochanan had said. Now the Gemara presents the same information, but in a reversed version. Iko diamri, a second version of this. Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan the Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan challenges the Reish Lakish. What did Reish Lakish say? Reish Lakish said that when you're dealing with the realm of potential misas based in, any offense where there's also a financial loss and financial obligation setting in simultaneously, even if there isn't an actual misas based in, Reish Lakish said, there'll be exemption. Well, Rabbi Yochanan challenges Reish Lakish. The pasuk says, V'lo ye'osayin, Onosh Yonesh, my love, does this not mean din ason? As we saw before in the Rashi, Rabbi Yochanan is demonstrating that if there is no capital punishment meted out, or there was simply no warning given ahead of time, even if the woman did die, Onosh Yonesh, there will be payment. So that shows you that Chayve Misas Shoigigin, where it was unintentional, there is payment. Lo, Reish Lakish will answer, Osoin Mamish. When there, Osoin Mamish, as we saw before, if the woman does not die, then he has to pay, he has to compensate. But if the woman dies, no compensation, even if there was no warning ahead of time. Meaning, even if it was chayvei mises shoygigin, the offender is exempt, like Reish Lakish. At this point, the Gemara raises a question on Rav Dimi's presentation. Omar Rava, Omi Ika Lamanda Omar, could it possibly be that there exists an opinion that says Chayvei Mises Shoygigin Chayovin, that a capital offense done unintentionally would engender a need for payment? And the reason for raising this question is Vaha Tana de Bei Chizkiya. We have a Tanaic source taught in the Yeshiva of Chizkiya that says as follows, Make Odem Umake Behema. And what he's referring to is he's referring to Psukim in the Torah. Rashi cites this on the fourth line from the top, Make Odem Make Behema, Make Behema Yeshamen, Umake Odem Lo Yeshalem, Elo Yumas. He's paraphrasing Psukim in the Torah, where the Torah compares the case of Makke Odom to Makke Behemah, and we'll explain. Let's read on in the text. Ma Makke Behemah, just like when one inflicts financial loss through killing someone's animal, Lo Chilakta Boy, we don't make any distinctions, Bein B'Shogeg, Bein B'Mezid, whether it was done unintentionally or it was done intentionally, Bein Miskaven, L'Shein Miskaven, Bein Derech Yerida, L'Derech Aliyah, L'Fotro Mamon, Elo L'Chaivo Mamon. We don't analyze how the animal's death took place, whether it was any under whatever the circumstances, whether it was a shogeg mezid miskaven, also is similar to the case of mezid ein miskaven, is similar to the idea of shogeg. Without getting into details, The idea of derech yirida, derech aliyah, means if you were, let's say, you kill the animal by hacking it to death, by picking the, as you were picking up an axe, or as you were lowering an axe, we don't pay attention to any of the details. You caused the owner a financial loss through the killing of his animal. You are always obligated to pay. It's unqualified obligation. So Af Maka Odom, similar, and you'll see what the similarity is when we get finished with the source, Af Maka Odom so too when it comes to killing a person. Lo Tachlog Bo, Bein B'Shogeg Bein B'Mezid, Bein Miskaven L'Shein Miskaven, Bein Derech Yerida L'Derech Aliyah, L'Chayvoy Mamon, Elo L'Fotro Mamon. When a person is killed, we make no distinctions in the intent or lack of intent thereby to impose any financial obligation. Rather, there's only exemption. Just like by the case of animal, we made no qualifications in the killing of an animal, of someone's animal. You always have to pay. When it comes to the killing of a person, you never have to pay. In that sense, they're both, we'll say, unqualified. So what do we see from this source? We see from this Tanaic source that when it comes to Chayvei Mises Shoygigin, there is never payment. And contrary to Rav Dimi's approach, who suggested that Rav Yochanan holds there is payment, that can't be. Elo ki also Ravin Omar, when Ravin came, he said, like we saw before, we can read it through again now, Chayvei Mises Shoygigin Kulei Alma Lo Pligi De Pturin. When it comes to a capital type offense, even if in this specific case it was done shogig, it was done unintentionally, nevertheless there is total exemption from paying. Once again, since in potential there was a capital offense, which certainly would have discounted any obligation to pay, therefore even in when it's not an actual capital offense, but it was a potential one, there's also exemption from paying. Keep pleading. When does a controversy arise? B'chayvei malkus shogin dover achir. When a person committed an offense warranting lashing plus financial obligation. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev, Rabbi Yochanan says he's chayav because chayve misis iskish, chayav malchus lo iskish. We saw chayve misos compared to makke behema, but we don't. That's what we saw in the Tana de Bechizkiyo source, but we don't find chayve malchus compared to makke behema. So the concept of something unqualified doesn't apply to the realm of lashing-oriented offenses. And Reish Lakish amar potter, he is exempt in Chayvei Malkius Shoigigin, even though he's not going to get the Malkius, he's not going to have to pay either. Beferish Rup Sotur Chayvei Malkius Ke Chayvei Misos. We find the Torah says explicitly, just like in Chayvei Misos, there is a total exemption, so too in the case of Chayvei Malkius, even if the Malkius are not going to be meted out, there is exemption. And the Gemara, as it goes on, tries to find where is that riboy in the Torah. Mirtz Hashem, I know it's unfortunate that we're leaving off really in the middle of a discussion, but in the context of a Daf Yomi style shir, we've already spilled over quite a bit. We'll pause here in a Mirtz Hashem, try to successfully get back into the discussion the next time. Before we conclude, however, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.